Barbershop Conversation, the sneak peek into the conversations that men typically have in life. What happens in a barbershop usually stays in a barbershop. Until now. Barbershop Conversations, where nothing is off limits. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Barbershop Conversations on The Answer Show, and I'm your host, Joe Paul. Thank you so much for tuning in. I want to make sure that we stay connected. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and what else? Facebook, YouTube. I just joined Snapchat, believe it or not, and we just posted something on the website, on Facebook, actually, where we were talking about you know you owe if you don't have a Snapchat account or if you don't even know what the hell Snapchat is. So those of you who are listening and you don't know what Snapchat is, you know you owe since you don't know what Snapchat is. But anyways, you can still show up to our controversial answers discussions that occur Monday through Friday. Pardon the background noise here. Monday through Friday, starting at noon Eastern Standard Time, we talk about every single subject. It's kind of like barbershop conversation, but everyone's invited. So simply log on to facebook.com/MrJoePaul to join the conversation. We certainly will be waiting for you. So joining me in this conversation, as always, is my brother from another mother, Mr. Esquire himself, AJ Miller. Jeezy, welcome to the conversation, bro.
What up, man? Glad to be here. Happy hump day, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Barbershop Conversation. You can connect with me on social media at AGZ, the number 4, and Governor. That's at AGZ for Governor, Twitter, Instagram, AJ Miller on Facebook.
The whole nine. Appreciate it, Jeezy. Also joining us, of course, rounding out the barbershop conversation, the barbershop trio, is the Reasonable Bachelor himself, Mr. Jackson Bracey. Jackson, welcome to the conversation, brother.
All right, good evening, fellas. I'm always here for the reasonable perspective on manhood, masculinity, and all that good stuff. You can connect with me on Facebook as Jackson Bracey or at Jackson Bracey on Twitter, and from thereasonablebachelor.com.
Fantastic. So I want to jump right in to the conversation. I want to do something called like an answers rewind, where we take a look at some of the past answers and see if we can provide some perspective to it. Because I know it's definitely different, and I know you guys can agree. It's definitely different when we're on Facebook and we're communicating than when we actually can speak our minds and our thoughts. I think a lot of things, number one, get lost in translation as you're trying to transcribe your thoughts. But at the same time, you really can't get everything that you want to say out during those, you know, during that short amount of time. So, Jackson, I'll start with you. And one of the questions that we asked earlier than answers, I think it was last week, was there's a burning building. Okay, here's a scenario. There's a burning building, and there are two people trapped. Not two people, but there are two. Your neighbor and your dog is trapped in this burning building, and you can only save one. Now, you've had this dog for about 8 or 9 years, and this dog has seen you through everything. I mean, it's seen you when you've cried. It's seen you when you was tripping after the girl didn't call you back after that hot date you thought you had. It's seen you when you broke up, when you got a new relationship. So it's seen you through everything, and it's been there for you since then. So you have a neighbor or a dog in a burning building. Jackson, who would you save?
Man, that is a tough question. And just from the way that you preface it about all of the ups and downs that people go through with their pets, mm-hmm. I understand people's compassion for their pets, even though I don't embody that same feeling myself. So I'm going to go on and take the neighbor for 2000, Alex.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to take the neighbor for 2000, yeah.
Okay, so you're thinking, like, I guess, you know, it's funny, before I got my two puppies, I definitely, no question about it, I said, hey, of course, it's a neighbor, you got to preserve human life, I mean, at all costs, and I am happy to say that that hasn't changed. I do love my puppies dearly, but I also believe in preservation of human life, you know what I'm saying? So I would, by nature, I have to actually go for the neighbor. And the good news is, my dogs are extremely smart, so they'd never be caught in a burning building. So, Jeezy, question for you, brother. Question for you. Burning building, your neighbor, or your dog? Same scenario as Jackson. You know, you've had this dog forever. This dog, you know, this dog knows you. You know, it may not talk back to you, but it understands every single thing that you say. It's been there for you. It loves you back. So who are you going in there to save?
I'm not a huge animal lover, but I mean, dogs are okay. And I'm not a huge neighbor lover either. But I think your priorities are you would choose a dog over a human being if you were put in a position to, you know, have to actually make a definitive choice with regard to, you know, who am I actually going to save? And I know that some people are in love with their pet, but I think that says something about, you know, your thought process and your, you know, values as a human being if you would opt for the dog. I really do.
I agree. I mean, now when we, you know, when I posted that question a while back, people were saying some interesting things. Number one, I remember guys who got on there. He said, "You know what? To be honest with you, I would save my pet. To hell with my neighbor. I don't know my neighbor. He never says hi anyway." So I mean, is that a reasonable response to that? I mean, or do you say, hey, you know, who cares if you don't know your neighbor or if your neighbor steals your paper every morning? You know, I mean, is that a reasonable response to say, you know what, I don't even deal with my neighbor like that. I know my dog, and I love my dog, so I'm going to save my dog before I save my neighbor. What do you think, Jeezy?
Yeah. It's an honest response, I'll say that, but I still don't think it's a reasonable response in the big scheme of things. And I think that just shows you how pop culture and how the media will make people's perception of, you know, what's really important somewhat skewed. I mean, like, even going back as far as the Michael Vick incident and his mistreatment of the dogs and the severity of punishment that he received in regard to that, which I thought was completely over the top, where you have, you know, people that commit way more, you know, egregious, way worse atrocities that, you know, or egregious offenses that, you know, mm-hmm. get slapped on the wrist. You know what I'm saying? When yeah. it should be a whole lot worse.
No question about it. Like cheating for the Super Bowl, or even cheating to get to the Super Bowl. You know, I mean, that New England that New England organization is, I mean, I tell you, it's ridiculous. You know, they hand out what's that? I forgot the kid's name who, for weed, right, for marijuana, they gave him a year suspension. And for Tom Brady, and he's a black player, I believe he played for the Browns, a year suspension. Now, for Tom Brady, Tom the Bomb Brady, he only gets four games, I should say, which is essentially 4 days. I mean, it's just four Sundays or a Monday, however they decide to sparse that out. But no, I agree, man. I agree. The punishment should definitely fit the crime.
Just to put it in perspective culturally, like, I never even really, you know, realized how serious people were about their dogs until I went off to college. Because all my African-American cohorts in all the hoods, we played football and basketball and coming up, a dog was pretty much like a large piece of furniture in your backyard. Like, first of all, your dog wasn't going to be all up in your house like that.
No.
I mean, you know, second of all, you know, hell, if the dog came up missing one day, no big deal.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're right. You wouldn't go out and put signs up. That didn't happen in a, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And the dog would typically find its way back because nobody else wanted the damn thing anyway. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you know, it wanders off and people are like, get out my damn yard. And it knows where its food is, so it's going to come back. You know, dogs ain't that stupid. Dogs are not that stupid. No, but dogs to some people are real. I mean, they're more real than humans. And people, I mean, look at that. Billion dollar, right? Go ahead, Jackson. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, that's definitely a cultural thing. I just had a conversation with somebody not too long ago about how I'm not a super dog lover, even though I've had dogs growing up here and there. But again, as AJ said, the dog never stayed in my house. You know, but in today's environment, it's almost like you would be considered
abusing. Yeah.
If you had a doghouse in your backyard where your dog stays.
Real talk.
And to me, that's disgusting.
Real talk.
I got in fights with girls that I've dealt with, dated, been in serious relationships or whatever, about a dog. Like, it'll be like, you know, a little warm outside or a little cold. Not like a lizard, not snowing or anything like that. But they literally think that the dog would not be able to survive outside. I'd be like, it has fur. It's an animal. That's what it's made to survive outside.
That's what it's for, right?
Yeah, it's like 45 degrees. The dog gonna be straight outside?
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, it's maternal instincts. Go ahead, Jeff.
I heard a minister one time, and he kind of broke it down into a cultural dynamic about how, you know, because let's be frank and honest here, in the African American community and in Hispanic communities and in Asian communities, we do not view dogs with the same level of esteem and companionship that people in the dominant society do. But
correct.
When you look at people, you know, if there is a stray dog in a neighborhood, you know, someone sees that dog and it looks like it's got a little mange, it doesn't have a collar, it's running around the street and might get hit. I mean, people will get out of their cars, they will buy something to eat, they will coax the dog over to them, pet it, love it, nurture it, take it home, bathe it, get it a whole wardrobe and a shave and a shower and all these things.
True.
Put the dog in your bed and kiss the dog in the mouth. But if you
True.
See a black man on the side of the street who's out of work on his last leg with a sign that says that we'll work for food, he's viewed, or not just a black man, any homeless.
Just any man, yeah, true.
We treat the homeless the way you would think people would treat dogs and treat dogs the way you would think people would treat the homeless.
Speak a word, brother. Speak a word. You ain't lying, because I tell you what, you know, I won't kick a dog, but I've kicked a few homeless people. No, I'm just kidding. No, clearly I'm joking. But no, you're absolutely right, Jackson. You're absolutely right. I mean, people treat dogs like, you know, I mean, they even have, I had this guy, I had a teacher, a professor in college who was astonished by how pets are treated in the United States. I think he was from Kenya or somewhere. And he said, you know, he said, when I first got here, I went into the marketplace. He said, I went into the marketplace, and it was very amazing to me that there was a whole aisle for your animals to eat food. That was amazing. A country so great that you designate one aisle for your animals.
You know, they even have organic dog food now, dog. Like,
yes,
real
they do.
Dog. They got, you know, try to keep your dog cholesterol down and everything.
Guess
that's
what?
Crazy. Like,
guess
that's coming
going,
up,
you know,
like all the table scraps will go in a little bucket, and that's the dog food right there.
Yeah, I buy it. I'm the
if
one
you,
that.
If you had a dog,
the,
yeah.
I'm one of the buyers. I buy
have
I
you
feed
ever,
my dog organic food. Yes, I do. And I'm proud of
have
it.
Have you guys ever seen those? Have you ever seen those dogs? They're miniature Doberman pinchers.
Yeah, miniature
yeah.
pinchers.
Yeah.
Now, did they have miniature pinchers when we were children?
No,
all these miniature
no,
things are
that's, the point
that's a newfangled thing, yeah.
That's the point I'm trying to make. Like, people who are into dog, who are dog lovers and into dog culture, like, scientifically, I think there are only like two or three natural, indigenous to the earth breeds of dogs, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And everything else is like a man-made,
science,
we're going to pick this dog, mate with this dog and kind of weed it out so we get all of these different breeds that we have now. So people have like genetically created these animals, like those miniature Doberman pinchers. Those are, I read, those dogs have heart defects and they usually are overweight because people try to cultivate them and keep them inside, but their genetics dictate that they're supposed to be outdoors, running around, getting a lot of exercise, which they wind up not doing because they become little fat mini dogs in the house.
Mm.
And it just amazes me that in a country where we have such a tremendous homeless and starving population of people, that we have state agencies that are geared around the preservation of dogs that we create.
Yeah.
You know, like
yeah.
I just don't like to me like if I think that if Americans really put it in perspective and we somehow could show you a chart that all the money that we have put into maintaining dogs and pets and things like that, if we took all that money and funneled it into homelessness, we could eradicate homelessness. I bet you wouldn't have not 20% of people vote to do away with dogs.
No, of course not.
No,
of course not.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, of course not. Now, speaking of dogs, gentlemen, let's change the subject, because dog is what a lot of women typically refer to men who ain't right, right? Girl, he is a dog, right? So, I mean, we've been called much worse. But speaking of dogs, someone called me a dog for my response to this scenario. You're on a date, and she tells you she parked in a no-parking zone. Then she gets towed, and after she gets towed, she tells you, you know what? I'm broke. I can't even pay to get this car out. So the question was, would you, Joe, pay to get this young lady who you're on a date with her car out for her mistaken parking in a no parking zone and for her mistaken not having money? The answer is absolutely not. I don't care how long you stayed and waited and parked and how you inconvenienced yourself. You got to pay attention to the signs, number one. And number two, how did we even get to a date if you're broke? Like, we don't even connect on that level. So, yeah, so for me, guys, there is no way on God's green earth that I would pay for this woman to get her car out. Jackson, what's your take on it?
Man, it's a tough question.
Yeah, it is.
It's a tough question.
You see why I was called a dog, right? You see why I was called a dog.
Right. Well, no, I don't. I absolutely do not see why you were called a dog. I don't.
Neither do I.
It's hard to answer that question, though, realistically, without your mind wandering to certain caveats. And the number one caveat that comes to my mind is I can't imagine that a woman who I went on a first date with, I can't imagine that a woman who I went on a first date with would have the gall to ask me to pay. Now, under no circumstances would I will offer to take you there to pick your car up. I mean, I don't mind doing that. But to ask me, you must have a lot of gall or you have already made an offer to compensate me for whatever monies I dole out to give you for your car. Like, that's the only those are literally the only two scenarios I can think of.
Now, define compensation, because women who are listening to us, right, and will listen to us, right at that point, they're thinking to them, like, hold on, what you mean by compensation? So I'm trying to play
both
sides.
Well, okay, so listen.
What do you mean by compensation?
I'm the reasonable bachelor, and I try to be very measured and tempered with my commentary. But I'm just being honest with you. I would imagine a scenario where she is, like, cupping my scrotum while asking me to pay for her car being towed. I don't know how you ask a guy who you don't really know, who is just taking you out on the first date, to pay for your car. I don't even, like, to me, if you there is no such thing as being that bad on your luck.
For sure.
Even if you shouldn't be dating.
You should
be taking
care of that stuff.
If this is my lady and we're building together and you've made a mistake, I'll pay for
different
your call.
Story. You know, different story. But you know what? I might, even in a relationship, and I want, Jeezy, I want to hear your perspective. Even in a relationship, honestly, I don't think I would pay for it, because she knowingly parked in a no parking zone. Even if she was running behind, whatever the reason why, it doesn't matter to me. The fact of the matter is, she knowingly parked in a no parking zone. So she knew the potential ramifications to her action was that she could get towed. And she did, in fact, get towed. So how is it my problem now that you parked in a no parking zone and you got towed? Like, why do I need to pay for your mistake? You know, so I don't support that fully, Jackson. I don't support that if I'm in a relationship, I'm going to pay for it. Because I'm not. I'm totally not. That's your mistake. You should have parked better or took public transportation. Oh, Uber. Shout out to Uber.
You got to figure though, Joe, like, and this sounds bad, but I'm gonna say it anyway. How often do men generally in relationships clean up a woman's mess because she did something careless, and vice versa? You know what I mean? It's the habitual nature of it that would bother me more. I don't mind
if she made a mistake before, basically.
Yeah, right. I don't mind helping you out from a mistake, and you better be awfully good in all the other aspects of your life and your relationship with me if you are expecting me to progress to the ultimate level if you openly and habitually make costly mistakes like that.
True. True. I can't even argue there. I can't even argue there. Jeezy, I need to hear your voice, bro. Where you at on this one, man? You on a date? And now, here's the thing. Now, on barbershop conversations, I don't remember a point where we all kind of agreed. I mean, we, you know, it's typically two against one or anything. So Jackson, I already said that we probably wouldn't, especially if it's a first date. So I know that you would pay for a woman to get her car back. So go ahead and tell us that story.
But no, man, here's the hypocrisy that trips me out about women when we discuss scenarios like these. Like, let's say the scenario was that on a first date, a man, you know, expected or anticipated or was offended if at the end, you know, because he, you know, felt it within himself to spend some time with you, he didn't get no booty at the end. I equate that the same way in the terms of how ridiculous it would be to expect that type of treatment when you're first meeting somebody. Like $350 to get your car out of tow, and I don't even really know you like that. We don't have an intimate relationship. I'm just trying to determine if, you know, if you're worth any more of my time and or financial resources. I'm not getting your car out of tow. You know, I might not even get your car out of tow if we have been on a few dates, you know, or whatever, because, you know, that's irresponsible on your part. And if we, absolutely, you know, if it had nothing to do with me or nothing that, you know, I wasn't involved in your parking process at all, hell no, I'm not paying for you to get your car to tow. And I'm offended.
Yep, that you would
even think. Yeah,
you're approaching me. What does that tell you
about Reggie
me?
Bush, if you think I'm going to pay to get your car out of tow. No
way. Now, Jeezy, you bring up a good point now. Check it out. $350 to get the tow, right? How about this, though? You're out on a date, so it's not like y'all in a park when she got towed. You're probably in a busy area, most likely close to a restaurant. So, and, oh, yeah, you know, before she told you she got towed, trust me, she had a couple drinks because she had to build up enough nerve to tell you she got towed and that she's broke. So she had a couple drinks and she ate a good meal. And, oh, she had dessert, too. So the bill comes out to about $200, right? And, or let's, you know, let's give her a break, $150. So $150 and $350. My math ain't good, but you're going to drop $500 on one night on a chick that you may or may not see again. That, you know, come on now.
Yeah, that's ludicrous. That's ludicrous, for real. Like, yeah. It's no way in the world that anybody with any sense of rationality or any sense, you know, in general with regard to, you know, quote unquote, what the man should do, or quote unquote, what the woman should do, could think that would be the gentlemanly thing to do, like Jackson said, would be to offer the young lady, you know, a ride and see that she got to her vehicle. Now, once was determined that she didn't have no bread, I'm just giving you a ride home, sweetheart. That's all. Yeah. That's it. I give you a ride home, and you know, you call your mom, your daddy, or, you know, or your loan shark, whoever you talk to when you fall upon hard times. But it won't
Hello.
Be me. Won't
yeah,
be
real
me.
Talk. I don't have no sucker on my forehead, young lady, so don't try to play me. Now, let me ask y'all this, okay? Here's a twist, Jackson. Here's a twist. Ping, 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 twist. Is there anything that she could do to get you to pay for the car? Everything is the same. Scenario is the same.
Well, yeah. Yes, there absolutely is. Absolutely. And I think that if she was smart, if she were a decent woman, she would lead with that proposition.
Hello.
She wouldn't. You know, I don't make me have to ask for that. Like, let's really build a relationship on concomitant circumstance. Okay,
Hello.
You do for me, do for you. This sounds bad as I say it,
but it's real.
But it's just the idea that someone would ask you to do something like that to me. There are just certain things I would not ask people to do, and if I did, I would ask with like the highest level of contrition and with
and humility,
the utmost and humility and the utmost, you know, effort to let someone know that I'm not trying to get over on you.
Absolutely,
and
I do plan to pay it back.
And on top, there you go, and I do plan on paying you back. But anybody who would just very freely and willingly ask you something like that without going so far as to, you know, as you know, having an expectation of it, like, oh, I need you to pay my tow. Like, whoa, you said that
a
little bit too. You didn't say that with enough.
That rolled off your tongue real easy. No,
absolutely,
no,
absolutely.
Yeah, no, it makes no sense. Jeezy, what about you? Are you in line with Jackson's statements, or is there anything that she could do to get you to pay for the car?
I'm totally in line with Jackson. I still would, and I'm gonna just be blunt with it. I still probably wouldn't pay for it if you even tried to use your crotch as a bargaining chip, because $350 is high for crotch. You overpriced for the market, baby. $350, that's high. I mean,
real
talk. $50 usually like get it done. Days. $50 usually get it done. Yeah,
real talk. That's so like 5 days.
You got to work for that.
Yeah, real talk. So, I mean, that's true. I mean, ladies, I know you listen, but you know this is Barbershop Conversation, and we keep it 100. Right? We keep it 100. So, here's another question for y'all. Okay. Now, Jackson, I know you are particularly passionate about this. Now, we had Steph Curry with the shot, Chef Curry with the pot, won the MVP award for the NBA this year, and well-deserved. I mean, shout-out to Steph Curry. I mean, the guy's shot is wicked from the three. So we posted a meme that Jackson sent that basically Curry thanks his father for his successful NBA career, and basically – how people view black fathers. And the meme goes on to say, they hate fathers. They hate black fathers. They detest responsible black fathers. They see us with murderous jealousy and resentment if you're a successful, responsible black father. So a lot of folks agreed with that. And I think we share in those sentiments as well. Jackson, I want to give you an opportunity to start us off, start the conversation off on this topic. You know, do people really detest seeing successful black men, black fathers in particular, as well as do they detest seeing black males getting credit for something good, right? So and they help us understand who they are, and I imagine that they means majority. So go ahead, Jackson.
Well, yeah, we talked about this at length amongst ourselves, and I do believe that the dominant society is not comfortable with the idea of authoritative, well-constructed, black men being in a position of authority with their families, okay? And as a way to kind of like deconstruct that whole notion, there's a lot of light and a lot of credit, much of it very well deserved, much of it convoluted, that we give to mothers who have to take on a matriarchal sort of position in their family. And what you do is you don't just say, great job, mom. You elevate mom's status as being, you know, against all odds, unbelievable, yeah, that's what she's been able to do, and, you know, superwoman and all these things, when in actuality, no parent should ever put a super in front of their name. What you should be as a father, what you should be as a
real
mother.
Talk.
You're not a
real
super
talk.
Father or a super mother. That is your responsibility. That child did not come into this world by their own
will. On their own.
It was because you wanted them. Okay, so don't ever take any extra praise or pat yourself any extra harder on the back because you're doing what you're supposed to do, whether you're with somebody or not. That's your job. I don't have appreciation for people who try to elevate themselves in those positions. But as far as the whole – but to highlight what I mean about Steph Curry is that for the last three or four years, we have gone over the top in the way that we've dramatized the tears and the stories of – these superstar black athletes being raised by their mothers. LeBron
True.
James, Derrick Rose cried. Kevin Durant told his mama, you the real MVP. Mm-hmm. And we just played that, and not just we in our own community, but the mainstream dominant society promotes that idea in such a way that it can get into the minds of people to say that, like, this is what
a
we should be proud of. This
mm-hmm.
is this is what we should be proud of, when in actuality, no, it's not what we should be proud of. It's not
True.
What we should be promoting, because these people have made it through circumstances that they should not have to make it through, okay? So what
Real
you
time.
Should do instead is you should promote the idea that Steph Curry, who has a mother and a father, who he always gives great praise to, this man stood up and said all these heartfelt things about his father, and nobody gave it any praise. So what
yeah.
does that say? People repeat what you promote to them. People repeat what you promote to them and what you shine light on. So
True.
It's the same thing with anything else. If you promote the idea that this child has graduated from high school with good grades and going on to college and doing great things, and you promote that first, then you will see more people living in the spirit of that promotion. But if you promote that little Johnny just came home from jail and starts selling drugs again, now he's giving out turkeys for Thanksgiving, then that's what you will get as well. The same thing is being embodied here. What did we do? We called a woman who went out, who's a mother of six, no around in any way. We went out and promoted the idea that she was a quote-unquote super mom, mom of the year, greatest mom alive, wish more like them. Well, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't want more mothers like her. I want to promote the mothers who already had control over their children that didn't have to go and beat them up on TV in Baltimore to keep them from riot. So, you know, and let me, I don't want to hog the time, but let me just say one of the things that I despise when we talk about these circumstances is we're always saying, you know, these words that I just cannot stand. We say, well, so-and-so is doing the best that they can. When you tell somebody they're doing the best they can, there's no other circumstance in life where you get praise or credit for doing the best you can. If AJ goes to work and somebody says, AJ, I need the report, say, I'm doing the best that I can.
Yeah.
Does AJ get credit for that?
No, like, AJ doesn't have a job on.
Right, at all. Or Joe Paul is the quarterback at Florida State and the coach yells at him, he threw an interception. Coach, I'm doing the best I can. Well,
oh, yeah, right.
They go get somebody to come take your spot.
Real
so
talk, your best ain't good enough.
It's like an acceptance of the idea that I have such low expectations for what I can do here. I just want you to pat me on the back for trying hard, even when I'm not really trying hard. So I just hate that whole notion.
Real talk, you don't get extra credit for doing what you're expected to do. You know, as a parent, you're expected to raise your child. You know, shout out to Dr. Nikhil Dixon. She posted the study. Actually, first I want to hear Jeezy. Do you have anything? I mean, Jackson said it all. Really, I told you he was passionate about that, and there's nothing I could add.
He preached the word. He preached the word
did.
On that.
He did.
Yeah.
He did.
Yeah. And I agree. I co-sign everything that Jackson said. But not only are those things true, but what's also true, and maybe a slight piggyback on what he was already saying is that I want to go to the credit that we give people for, you know, dealing with messes that they've made on their own. Like the little joke I was making when we was doing a little Facebook conversation with Mikhail, who you just shouted out about the study on the black kids without fathers present in their lives versus, you know, as compared to other races. I feel as though, like, you know, as a woman, as a gatekeeper of your womb, if, you know, if you have a pattern of making poor decisions and choosing men that, you know, not only do not engage in your children, but do not engage in or respect you, I'm not giving you credit for making a huge mess of your life and, you know, managing that mess. And, you know, you may manage it, you know, extremely well, or you may manage it average, or you may, you know, do a poor job managing it. But you're not going to get too much credit from me in any of those instances at all, because your lack of judgment at the front end of the deal is, you know, is really what caused you to be in the mess that you're surviving and that quote unquote made you the superwoman that you claim to be, or that people, you know, bestow you as being.
Yeah, real talk. And, you know, perfect segue. I was giving Dr. Dixon, I'm pretty sure she's going to appreciate being called Dr. Dixon. So I'm giving Dr. Dixon a shout out for putting that study up that shows basically black men defy that stat, which I don't even know where it came from, where, you know, black men are basically fathers are absent. So I'll read a little bit of the article, and then we'll talk about this for a second. When the public reacts to the deaths of young black men in Baltimore and Ferguson and Sanford, we often hear about a crisis, quote unquote, among black fathers, namely that too many of them are absent from their children's lives. But that crisis, quote unquote, may not be real at all. A study conducted by the Center for Disease Control found that black fathers are just as present, and sometimes more so, in the lives of their children than dads of other races, defying the stereotype that black fathers simply aren't around to give their kids support and guidance. The study provides a telling look at fatherhood among black, Latino, and white men. The CDC found that a higher percentage of black fathers living with young children up to age 5 did daily activities like sharing meals, dressing their children, and reading to them than other fathers. Across the board, black dads did just as much as white and Latino dads, whether they live with or apart from their children. It should be noted that that's often the statistic that gets thrown around when we talk about the crisis of black fatherhood, that more black men live apart from their families than other fathers. That's true, but as Think Progress notes, there's evidence that suggests that number stems from structural systems of inequality and poverty. So, Jackson, I want to start with you. And let's talk about this for a second, because clearly this absent father, absent black father myth that's been created, just like the black-on-black crime, and it's not a myth, but the black-on-black crime rhetoric that goes on, you know, just the same thing. I mean, I think that we're going to start debunking a lot of myths as people become more and more knowledgeable of facts as opposed to people's opinions that are shared on the idiot box, also known as the television. So, Jackson, I want to get your take on this. You know, first, what's your reaction to the article, and then we'll talk about the entire black father, the absent black father myth. So go ahead.
Well, I think that, you know, I'm not overly surprised by hearing that data. I think that, you know, we throw around the data that says that upwards of 70% of black children are born from out-of-wedlock homes, and we stop the analysis right there. We don't consider or take into account the activity level of fathers and mothers who live together, who have children and they're not married. We don't consider the influence and the activity level of parents who are co-parenting, and they do a very good job of that, a very amicable job of that. But it's just like the other notion that we just had about the last topic that we talked about, that people start to embody the negativity that they hear when they have these things through media consumption drummed down their throat and into their consciousness. So when you hear those things about 70% of black children born without fathers in the home or whatever, it creates a narrative without looking at the finite aspect of the data that black fathers are absent, they are disengaged, and they are unloving. And it gets all the way to that depth. So then you take, you know, people on the other side of the population, whether it be elders who are out of the childbearing years or the women who are dealing with these sorts of circumstances, whether they are single women with no kids just looking and observing from other people's perspective, or whether or not you're a woman. And it starts to also embody a negative sentiment and feeling even when you possibly have a good situation going on. Okay, everyone's relationship does not work out to be hunky-dory and good roses. That does not mean that mothers and fathers cannot parent their children. Obviously, we would like to see people be together and have intact family units, but that does not always work. So I guess what I'm driving at is that if you allow other people to put a narrative in your mind and frame data and frame information under a certain context, it will allow you to live your life by the worst of your experiences. So what I mean by that is you can be a young man and you have a wonderful mother who has loved you and promoted you. You have a grandmother who has given you wisdom and self-confidence, a sister who is a fine, shining example of what a young lady should be. You could have three or four girlfriends in your history that have been tremendous to you. It just did not work out. But if you sit around and consume images and consume rhetoric and consume music and live your life by the two or three guys you know who had girlfriends who cheated on them, you will start to, like, really feel like bitches ain't shit. Excuse my phrase. You understand? Like, it's like people, we absorb these things so much that it becomes part of our consciousness, whether or not they're true or not. And I think that's part of the problem with this. I would never say that we don't need to improve greatly in terms of absenteeism amongst fathers, especially in the African-American community. But at the same time, let's not get carried away to the point that we promote that negative narrative so much that we cannot come back from it.
No, real talk. I mean, you know, one of the things that the study showed as far as fathers being involved, children under five fed or ate meals with their children daily. 78% of blacks, or black males, basically, fathers living with kids, responded to that. 73% of white and 64% of Latino ate meals with their children daily, probably because, you know, Latino because they're working. So I could definitely understand that. I can see how they can. Yes, because they're working. You know, I mean, they're hard workers, man. I'll tell you, man, they really are. Shout out to all my Latinos, man. I mean, they really do work hard, man. You know, I appreciate that. Now, let me ask y'all this. It's just completely off the subject here. But is it that Latinos are hardworking, or is it that they work a lot? Or is it that there are a lot of them that we see in our circles that just happen to be working? Because I have a lot of, you know, black friends who work and work. So, yeah, AJ, what's your take on that, man?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think that that's just a similar, you know, publicized stereotype that similar to the one we're discussing as far as black fathers not being absent. So, that's another little stereotype, you know, Hispanic men, you know, work hard. You know, they got, you know, sell fruit on the freeway, doing whatever odd jobs they could do to, you know, provide for their loved ones. Black daddies ain't there. Latino men, you know, working, slinging fruit, you know, whatever you want. Asian people can't drive. Whatever you want to say. It's just a stereotype that is highly perpetuated when, you know, by and large, the numbers may not be that significantly different if you actually examine reality. And like I was going to say about that study, it was that you know, I always put those things in the context of things I see with my own two eyes. And, you know, this is people that I have in my personal circle, and as well as just, you know, people that I just observe from a distance. I've never really known that many black children that have zero connection with their father. I really don't. Like,
yeah.
I can't even think of one off the top, unless that person was, you know, either dead or incarcerated. But other than that, most people that I know... Right, or some type of father figure, yeah. Mm-hmm. But most people that I know have a father figure or a male person, you know, that engages in them and that cares for them and that they can, you know, at the very least, you know, talk to when they need to or something along those lines. But that doesn't feed into, you know, systemically as far as oppression goes, what is trying to be perpetuated. So what it is that, you know, the system is set up to where it's not supposed to be, the numbers are not supposed to be that high, and they want to continue to perpetuate the images and messages in hopes that, you know, it will be that. And not only is that the propaganda that circulates through the media, but systemically as far as, like, the judicial system and, you know, like, family court as well as government as far as, like, welfare programs, it's women are often, especially black and minority women, are often incentivized to push men out of their circle. So, you know, a large chunk of that percentage, you know, that does account for fathers that are absent or inactive in their children's lives. I would venture to say that it's probably due in large part to, you know, systemic setups that women have been incentivized to push that man out, basically.
Oh, sure.
The system got him and he's in jail.
Go ahead, Jackson.
I'm sorry, you go ahead.
No, all I was going to say was basically how you had to, that's how you got welfare back in the day. You know, the only way you get subsidized housing is if a man did not live in the home with you, because the law said that if you had an able-bodied male, then you could not receive any subsidies. And it's like, well, how can you receive any subsidies if you don't have a father in there? So the father, in many cases, had to live apart from the family when they started building these ghettos. So, and then, and if they found out that the dude was there, they kicked him out, right? I mean, it was just, it's insane. It's insane. So, but yeah, this speaks to the systemic. So, go ahead, Jackson.
I just want to, you know, there are a couple of things that I just want to add to what you all said, because I totally agree. There is a component of humanity that has been stripped away from black men in particular as it relates to absenteeism in the home. And by that I mean is that it's almost to the point that it's the butt of jokes, and it is a common narrative for people to assume that black men literally have no care or concern for the offspring that they create. And what I want to say in response to that is that it is more indicative of manhood and masculinity to take care of your children more so than to father children, okay? It makes you feel more like a man to be able to take care of children than to father children. Now, let's look at this real actualized data. Black men commit suicide in this country more than anyone else in the world. I mean, not the world, more than anyone else. We have the highest suicide rate of anyone. Okay, so that's an underexposed reality that we deal with. But I'll say where that comes from is a man's inability to see the vision that he has for himself and bring it together through the means of his own hands. That's happiness for a man, to have a vision and to be able to bring it to life. Additionally, mm-hmm. when a man has to look into a house, into a home with children that he has sired, and he is unemployed and has no way and no feeling or sentiment on how he can provide for them, it will push him to the brink of suicide. And the first rule of nature is self-preservation. This is why a lot of men leave. It sounds bizarre, but I cannot, as a man, look at my two children who are hungry and cold in the other room while their mother is able to maintain whatever job she can, but I am not able to find any level of employment, not even just the bottom of the barrel level of employment, okay? Yeah. Now, if we do all these think tanks and these studies that show specifically that our workforce and labor force is populated with hiring practices that are skewed to where black people are the first, black men especially, are the first to be fired and the last to be hired, and we know that there's an inequity there, it only stands to reason that you're going to have a fair amount of black men that are out of work, oftentimes not through this narrative of being lazy and bad workers and unwilling to do good things. So, and when you put that together and figure that we have to be fathers who are living in a circumstance where I am bringing literally nothing to the table, it's enough to make a man kill himself. So what's the alternative? He leaves. He goes and tries to get himself together, and in that kind of space, it becomes an out-of-sight, out-of-mind thing. If I can push myself away from the reality that I am not able to take care of my kids, it makes me feel better in an immediate sense. So the best thing that black men can do in this country, in this world, is to take greater control over their reproductive health. You can't rely on a woman to not have kids. That's what women are physiologically built to do. Okay? True. So, you know, if you can't, you know, it's wrong to rely on her to not have them. So the best thing for you to do is to, you know, you take control over your reproductive health, because if you don't have a job or a means to really take care of kids, it's not going to get any better for you to see small kids that, you know, can't eat and can't be warm and things like that.
Real talk. Real talk, you're preaching a word today, man. I apologize because we can't raise the offering virtually, so you'll just have to
PayPal.
Look, I'm
going
to go along with that one, man.
PayPal donation.
Hello.
I'm holding on to that one just because you hear so much that black men, like, it's like comedians make the joke about, oh, you're black. I know you don't know your dad. He doesn't care about you. It's like narrative that black men literally are so cold and heartless that we can just, like, have kids and I don't care nothing about you. That's really not what it is. Obviously, that is it's on a very low level. But at the level,
and literally, I don't know anybody, like, I literally don't know any black man like that. Not one.
Yeah,
neither do I.
All the black men I know.
I just hear about them, and I just hear the same jokes that you hear, Jackson. But, like, as far as, like, just personally knowing somebody that, you know,
well, I bet you don't know very many unemployed men either, AJ. That's a correlation, you know.
True.
Well, yeah, you got a point there. Yeah.
I don't either. I mean, I don't know too many unemployed guys. I mean, you know, except for the ones who ask me for money on my way into work. So, anyways, guys. No, I'm kidding. You know, clearly I'm feeling cheeky this evening. So let me ask you this. I'd like to end our conversation off with a nice, comforting topic, right? And so I think that it's important that we're going to do this round robin, right? So none of us have heard of the question, but I'm going to pull it out, just like we did one, you know you're old if, right? So this one right here, and I'll start so I can give you guys an opportunity to kind of get it, and then we'll keep going round robin for a few of these, and then we'll switch it. Okay, so you know it's time to stop seeing her. If or when, and then you fill in the blanks. Okay, so y'all start thinking about yours, and I'll go and start with mine. Off the top of the head, let's see, top of the dome. You know it's time to stop seeing her if she no longer excites you like she did when you first met her. That's mine. So Jeezy and then Jackson.
her back hairier than yours.
God. Well, yeah, I agree. It's time to stop seeing her. If her back is hairier than yours.
If she got Sasquatch back, you got to leave that alone.
I agree. Jackson, you know it's time to stop seeing her if or when.
When she discovers or when she exposes that she's the kind of woman who would purposefully say things to push emotional buttons.
I like it. You know it's time to stop seeing her if you cannot count on her. Like if you call her to come and help you out and pick you up because you was really late and it was dark out there and nobody was out there and she didn't come out there and you got to leave her alone. Okay, so my bad, guys. I was having a moment there.
Testimony? You got testimony?
No, I'm joking.
I'll come get you, dog. You ain't lying.
I know,
dog. You, up, man.
You
cry.
Ain't lying, dog.
Don't cry.
You ain't lying. You ain't lying. No, I ain't nothing like that. No, it really ain't. No, but seriously, hey, if you know it's time to stop seeing her if you can't count on her. I think one of the things that's paramount in any relationship is if a man could count on a woman and if a woman can count on a man. I mean, nobody wants to be with someone that they can't count on. That's why you keep friends around, right? Wouldn't y'all agree? All the friends that you have in your circle, you can pretty much count on them, right, in some way, shape, or form. Jackson?
Absolutely.
So, AJ, it's on you. Jackson, then we'll switch it to...
You know mine going to be ignorant, so I got another ignorant for you. You know it's time to leave her alone when she only give you the booty on your birthday and on Christmas. You got time to go.
Amen.
Time to go.
Amen.
If you only get holiday booty, it's time to go.
That's true. Now, is that restricted to relationships or marriages, too? It doesn't matter.
Everything. If you only get holiday booty, I'm giving you the your freedom papers. You can leave.
And that's
it's
real.
Your,
I mean,
it's your God given right to go get some.
But you know that here's what I think, guys. Okay, now I do believe with few exceptions that if you only getting booty twice a year, trust me, both of y'all are getting it from somewhere else. Because I don't think that anybody could be satisfied with twice a year. You know what I'm saying? Come on, man. Or the people who make up stuff like, I've never been married, for the record. But I find it hard to believe that, wife and husband have to schedule make love. And that's confusing to me. Maybe for some relationships it might work. I don't get it. Jackson, you know it's time to stop seeing her. If or when?
It is time to stop seeing her if and when. Oh, man. You know I'm reasonable, Joe. You know I'm I'm pretty understanding over here, man. Good Lord. But it's time to stop seeing her if, AJ took mine. Goodness.
My ignorant comment was what you was gonna say.
I might have framed it a little differently, But it's time to stop seeing her if she has a negative vision on where she sees your family going. When you start to build a family, like when people don't have they don't share your vision, for where you see your family going.
Yeah, real talk.
One came to
my mind. You know it's time to stop seeing her if you pay for everything. Yeah.
Amen.
Yeah, yeah. That's a lot of pressure, man, especially in these times when things cost a lot and dollars don't go as far. And these strong, independent, equally yoked women, as they like to call themselves, take out your American Express card, help each other out, man. Chicken fingers higher than a mug.
Be independent on that bill, shawty. Be independent on that.
Liberate yourself, please.
Express your independence.
Take your credit cards out.
Real talk.
I got another ignorant one for you.
Go ahead, let me hear it. You know it's time to stop seeing.
I got another ignorant one. You know it's time to stop seeing that girl when she's trying to hack into your iPhone or your Samsung.
Because I'm
telling you right now, you go through my phone, our relationship is over. It's immediately over. And it might be your choice, but either way, it's going to be over.
It's immediately over because you don't want to see what's in there, baby. You don't want to see. And why do people do that? Why do you even go through people's phones? You're going to find something. And even if that something is nothing, like truly nothing, it's still going to – the perception is going to be like, hold on. Well, I mean, who's Jackson? Like, why have you been texting him for 6 months? Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And why haven't I met this guy? Like, what's going on? This is crazy.
I mean, and, and if you go through my phone, it might not even be that you find something that I, you know, as far as like another woman, you might just find some ignorant stuff I said about you to my homeboy. I say my homeboy all the time. I might have just went in on you because that's my private space to say whatever I want to say to whoever I want to say it to. So you know, you should never go through
and
go through somebody's electronic devices.
To that point, AJ, I'm on like two or three different GroupMe and WhatsApp chats with, and some of those are married guys. They use that kind of ratchet conversation that we have during the day to get through life, okay?
Exactly, exactly.
Say whatever they want to say and feel free and comfortable in a way that they just are not able to connect with their lady. And, I mean, you know, as a single guy, that seems to me like, man, I hope my situation doesn't wind up being this way, but clearly these men love their wives enough to kind of have that duality. Just give me the space to be silly and foolish so when I come around you, I can be more, you know, amenable to who we get along being.
But that's not cool, though. I mean, to be in a relationship where you can't even express yourself or you can't even be yourself, you know what I'm saying? I mean, that's tough, man. That's why I think it's critically important that you establish a friendship before you jump into any relationship because, man, if you can't hang with that person, then trust me, there's no reason for you to be. You know, you got to stop seeing her if you can't really be the homie. Like, if you can't hang with her and like and enjoy hanging with her, like if you want to be with your friends more so, then what's up?
Let me ask you this. Let's say you date a woman who's perfect for you. She's graceful. She's ladylike. She can laugh at your jokes. She thinks you're hilarious. But let's say she loves to fart and tell dick jokes.
Well, AJ, I'll tell you right now, if anybody's seen AJ, that's when I'm leaving. You fought around me, I'm gone.
She gets that release out and her foul mouth and her tampon jokes and all the lewd stuff that you are not necessarily super comfortable with. She gets that out on a chat thread every day from 8 to 5 while she's at work with her girlfriends in the office, and they think that is hilarious. You mean to tell me? I mean, that's kind of her release.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, listen, I agree
mean
with that.
Still have good jokes.
Hey, let me tell you, 4 seconds ago, I had a paradigm shift. I certainly appreciate that. I think, hey, listen, any means that you have to express yourself so you don't have to talk to me about tampons and all that stuff, baby, you do it. You do it. Because trust me, I'm not even trying to talk anyway. So please, you do it. You know, I prefer
because
my peace and my quiet.
Really quickly, because we can take it to a more reasonable level when you consider that girls talk to each other about a plethora of things that we never want to hear or know about. Like
somebody
had on. Like that, so you know it's comparable.
Yeah, real talk. It really is. I mean, you know, I sometimes just don't want to hear. I don't want to hear some of the normal stuff some women have to say. But, you know, I mean, not that I'm women bashing, but you know, cause when you're in a relationship, you hear some stuff. You really don't want to hear about all of that. I really don't. And you're forced to listen. You know what I'm saying? You're forced to sit there and take it. You know what I'm saying? Oh, did she really? Oh, that's great. Oh, yeah. Oh, he did it again, huh? Okay, yeah. Oh, yeah, they ain't moving. They ain't
like
your staple
back. Huh? I ain't think you told me yesterday, huh? Okay, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you ain't talking much again, huh? I get it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's all we have for this episode of the Barbershop Conversation. We definitely hope you enjoyed it because we certainly enjoyed having it. On behalf of AJ Miller, Jackson Bracey, myself, and the rest of the crew, I'm Joe Paul, and I want to thank you for tuning in. Be sure to check out all of our shows. They're available to listen and download at blogtalkradio.com/theanswershow or directly on the website, www.joepaulspeaks.com. I said W, but W for all you bougie folks. And remember, we're Bob, and we're going to keep it real. Thank you for joining us. Good night.